No.
I mean, in sections.
Oh, I see, sub one, sub two.
Sub one, sub two, and sub three, and sub four.
Well, maybe I.
Eric, you're moving too quickly on section one to delete references to conduct result from tenuous circumstances. We do it from there.
From section one?
Yeah. The others follow without a definition of them. I agree they can be defined elsewhere, but if we're unwilling to wait.
What?
Go ahead. Maybe we put it back in number one, or consider the whole thing when we have the definition.
Well, assuming that we agree that it was proper in many of us, we did, why can't we achieve the objective here and take Don's path and say in step one, a person acts intentionally with respect to a material element of an offense when it is his conscious purpose to engage in the conduct or cause the result. Period. Two, a person acts knowingly with respect to a material element of an offense when he is aware of the nature of his conduct and the existence of the attendant circumstances. Three, a person acts recklessly with respect to a material element of an offense when he acts in awareness of a substantial risk that, well,
all we're doing is getting rid of attendant circumstances in each case. This seems to be the one that's really, as I recognize you.
Well, I'm not so sure we're making it uniform between the subsections. We're making it explicit that we mean with respect to the material and we're kind of lumping conduct, result, and attendant circumstances all together more or less, rather than setting them out.
I have a question. If we do this, then are you going to define, how are you going to define the material element of an offense? Because if you're going to define it in a disjunctive as meaning conduct or attendant circumstances or a result of conduct, then by putting in a material element of a crime in like subsection A and subsection 2, does that mean any one of those three would be sufficient? And if it does, then you're back to the same time, because what you've done in one is you allowed it to just be attendant circumstances instead of conduct and result. See, how would you define material elements, or would you make it conjunctive and then you've got all three and you're back to the same time in section 1?
Well, of course, now the model people put approach to that is that respect to nature of the conduct or attendant circumstances, it's set forth as if the element involves these things. They're not saying that these things are the element, but that if the element involves these things.
But
will
it have to involve all three of them or any one of them? I mean, in the way we would do it. I think that's my question.
Wait a minute, I'm shooting. Think this might involve all three of them.
But then does the amendment really make any difference in essence?
You mean the amendment to section one? It's better to realize that at our first subcommittee meeting on this than on our fourth subcommittee meeting on this.
Describing large circles. In the first place, I don't necessarily agree that the material element or that a material element involves all three of those things. And I don't think that's what you were saying here, even with your first draft. I mean, I don't think you were saying that a material element has to include, with respect to the culpability requirements, conduct result in the intended circumstances.
Well, no, I'm thinking of material element in a different way than what you are. You're thinking, are you not a material element in the sense of what, in a criminal law class, as you say, the elements of burglary are breaking and entering the dwelling house another in the nighttime with the intent to commit a felony therein, and each one of those is an element. I think the Model Penal Code is saying that material elements are, one, the conduct, two, the attendant circumstances, and three, the result. Now, they may be the same thing, but they aren't necessarily the same thing.
Slightly different things. Material elements of a crime are different in with respect to different crimes.
Sure.
But what she's trying to do is to generalize, and so we've got a general statement that the following things are included in the material elements of every crime. Isn't that basically it? That every crime is going to have some material element, some material elements which involve the conduct. The result of the conduct and the circumstances under which the conduct is committed, carried on. Those are common to all crimes.
Right.
But they're not elements.
But they're not the conduct in one case might be shooting somebody, in another case might be busting in his door, and the next case running into him with a car, and so forth.
To that extent, they're elements is used in the sight of the upset.
Are there always attendant circumstances? There are not always attendant circumstances.
Oh, yes, there.
Oh, I think there always be attendant circumstances.
The
time of day. In some cases, the crowded condition of the bar in which you pull the trigger, and another one, so forth. I think there always be some attendant circumstances in there.
Every phase of life involves attendant circumstances.
If they don't, why then you're going to be back to the, except in the very few cases where we're going to have to create a very simplistic crime, the possession of marijuana business. We're going to say that the attendant circumstances don't count there, just the fact that you possess marijuana, no matter how you got it.
The time of day or anything else.
It doesn't make any difference the time of the day, or who put it in your pocket, or you grew it yourself.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just I'm having trouble with that phrase.
Attendant circumstances.
Well, I'm having trouble with the material elements.
Well, we're thinking about the term material elements in two entirely different points of view.
Yeah.
And we're using it in two different ways when we talk about the elements of a crime. Like burglary, in the nighttime, you'll define what that crime is, but the attendant circumstances of criminal conduct in general.
This is the kind of thing newspaper editors can understand.
Is doing something and the result of it and the attendant circumstances.
It seems to me that your elements of the crime of burglary, as you would learn in law school, are the breaking and entering the dwelling house another in the nighttime with the intent to commit a felony therein, that several of these elements, for definition of that crime, make up attendant circumstances. One of those elements makes up the overall element of conduct. And the result, I don't know whether there's any result in the thing or not. In murder, for instance, the result would be the death of the victim, wouldn't it?
No, it isn't.
My law school training's bothering me so much is I keep remembering the instruction you always get in a criminal case, that the state's required to prove each and every material element of the crime without a reasonable doubt, and then you go through and you list the material elements of this crime. And I think that's what is bothering me here with respect to these culpability elements, is they would have attached to material elements of a crime, and this isn't what you're talking about, obviously.
Not quite.
Couldn't avoid the command crime by thinking another term other than material elements of the crime, so that there isn't confusion, so that people aren't thinking of the old way and trying to introduce just a new word, and it may not do anything other than try to keep people from thinking of material elements of the crime in the manner that Don was speaking of.
Well, what he's saying is...
Confusion for using the same terms for two different concepts.
What he's saying is that no matter what the crime, no matter what the material element specified in the statute, that each material element of every crime falls into one of these three categories. And that to then, without going in and writing a liability statute, a culpability statute on each crime, or without writing a culpability statute on each material element section, we were trying to put one general culpability statute together so that you can say that in one case the breaking and entering is conduct, and conduct is intentional if it's conscious purpose and so forth and so on. In the next case the conduct is shooting somebody and he shot him intentionally, if so forth. I think I follow the reasoning, and I think I see we might have to have a judge's school for a day or so. We're going to have one anyway when we get through this. No, we are. Lawyers resist change pretty strongly, and judges resist it more than the rest of their fellow lawyers.
This thing I'd like to say is probably unimportant in one sense, in another sense it's kind of important. All of the people that are getting up teaching material for teaching criminal law now stick in a hunk of the model penal code and a hunk of the comments to it in with their cases. So that, grant you, as far as a lot of judges are concerned now that are going to be angry with the model penal code, and a lot of law students are angry with the model penal code, at least all law students are being exposed to it now. So all of the laws that are being produced now are being exposed to, at least to the existence of it, and some glimmer of idea of what it's trying to talk about. So for the future, that will be the base of their education.
Well,
now because I
was I
saying,
all right. Can we draft sub 1, 2, and 3 without using the words conduct, result thereof, intended circumstances, and then just use material elements?
Possibly so, although even the model penal code, which uses material element, also uses conduct and so forth. A person acts purposely, we would say intentionally, with respect to a material element of an offense. They use the material element, you see. Let me say, if the element involves the nature of his conduct or a result thereof, it is his conscious object to engage in conduct of that nature or to cause such a result. And two, if the element involves the intended circumstances, he is aware of the existence of such circumstances or he believes or hopes that they exist. Maybe we're driven back to simply adopting the model penal code because we feel more at home with it here, feel better about it.
I have to apologize.
We can't define the. Is there trouble here? We can't define material elements.
No.
We can do that.
Well, what we have traditionally referred to as material elements of a crime are those things that the state has to prove with respect to each charge that's made. I don't say it's improper to use the term material elements in the other sense, but it's a different thing.
Well, the material elements are those elements of the crimes defined in the statute.
That's right.
Breaking and entering. Now, what if I may have been out in orbit when this has been going on because I'm getting older and fatigue is beginning to wear in, but let me see if this isn't the problem that you had in mind, Don. You said you were concerned about the instruction where the court says you have to, the state's required to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the material element of each material element of the crime, and then if you inject attendant circumstances in there, the state's going to have to prove that, include that in the material elements, and also prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. So you're sticking something in that instruction by virtue of this statute, which doesn't exist, or which isn't contained in the proscribed statute, right?
Now, that's part of it.
I don't think this is a result, though.
Well,
if
there's a glimmer of doubt in the minds of those of us here that it could possibly it be construed that way, boy, you can rest assured that there's going to be a diversity of opinion among the people who are going to...
36 district attorneys with
them. Are you suggesting this, though, gentlemen? And this is an intellectually lazy thing I'm going to say. Have the drafters in New York, and Illinois, and Michigan, and California created an impossible situation in those states? So did they run in too fast, do you think?
Well, have they? Has the California code, for example, been in existence long enough to...
It didn't exist at all. But New York's...
Illinois has been in since 1961.
This
is no
help at all.
62, somewhere along there.
I started yesterday trying to collect cases under Illinois and New York, and I didn't get far enough so I could report anything.
Well, the thing I wonder about is, are they really doing an effective job in those states, and do we have any information on it? This is what's worried me all along through all of this. It would be fairly quickly. I think sometimes a model penal code has never been tested in any really effectively.
Well, no, I think you've got a good point, and I say I'm embarrassed because I didn't get it done, but I've got a list of cases that have been decided in Illinois and a list of cases that have been decided in New York since they adopted the code. And I haven't got the cases read yet, and I think that's one of my next things I need to do.
But their language is different, though, than California's, isn't it, for, with respect to...
What did you say now?
The language the Illinois uses is substantially different than this California language.
Oh, it is different, yes. Do you think the gist of it's any different, substantially, though, Don?
Well, I think it's different to this extent. This is what kind of bothers me. And that is, the model penal code, and the way I read this Illinois language, they're talking about material elements that involve certain other things, such as the nature of the conduct and attendant circumstances. Whereas, the way that this California language is drafted says, in effect, that these are the material elements. I think that's what... It seems to me they've gone a step further in saying that the material element consists of the conduct, the result, and the attendant circumstances. And I don't think that's what the Model Penal Code is saying. And I don't think that's what Illinois is saying. I sound like old Moss back here.
No, you're doing fine.
But it seems to me that it's far different to say, as the Model Penal Code has done, that a person acts purposely with respect to a material element when that element involves the nature of his conduct. I think that's a far different thing than saying that his conduct is a material element.
But now, in 1.13 of the Model Penal Code, if I can find it, on page 22, they define element of an offense, and on page 23, they define material element.
Yeah, and I don't...
You don't bet on the body?
No. In fact, I'm all for it. I think that's fine. I think it should be fine.
Uh-huh.
But then if you look over and you look under section 202, though, and the way that they have set out these different culpability definitions, you'll notice that they use language that says that if the element involves these things, they're not saying that these things are the element.
Let's see.
Which is what? I think it's what the draft says.
Well, now, my only reason for using the California language was simply for uniformity. I have no quarrel with the Model Penal Code language whatsoever. I wonder why California
didn't adopt it, and I don't know that they say. I'd be perfectly pleased to go the other.
Maybe I'm seeing a problem there that doesn't exist, but New York, you see, New York defines intentionally, a person acts intentionally with respect to a result or a conduct described by a statute defining an offense, etc. And knowingly, a person acts knowingly with respect to conduct or to a circumstance described by a statute. The same type of language with respect to recklessly and criminal negligence.
Well, let me say this. We're hung up.
Yep,
and we're not, and we're not going to resolve it today. And it just apparent to me because of the apprehension of so many of us here that we've got more work of a draft in nature to do on this. Before we're going to be able to reach an accord. If we go back and endeavor to conform more closely to the format set out in the Model Penal Code, it's going to mean that each of these sections going to have to be redrawn.
Well, no problem with that, you betcha.
And so I guess we have to make a policy decision as to whether we think that we escape some of these conflicts or hang-ups that we did that. What do you think?
Well, I was looking at that in Arson, we got preliminary draft number one, preliminary draft number two, number three, number 3A, and number 4.
And we're going to, and then...
Now we're going to 4A this afternoon, so...
correct.
I don't feel too bad about losing one on the first round. I mean,
no.
We're going to have these problems.
Far, far better for us as a subcommittee to wrestle with this than to pass it out and come out with something unsatisfactory. But I think we've probably reached a point of diminishing returns as far as we're collectively concerned on culpability. So, could I suggest that I think the discussion been tremendously helpful insofar as setting the mood or the tone as the subcommittee is concerned, and that using the discussion as something of a guide would be helpful in approaching the redraft. Would you agree, Professor?
Fine, you betcha.
What do you think? It's going to be productive for us to keep hacking at this.
I don't think so.
Well, what directions are we giving him now?
Are we going to suggest that he goes more in the direction of the Model Penal Code than in California? Are we suggesting that he try to remove the ambiguity that we think at least exists in these definitions by the use of the terms that we cut out of Section 1. Conduct is under the circumstances.
Oh, the choice between the two, I'd rather go to the Model Penal Code.
I think it's a safer
it's a safer route. I'm not too impressed with some of their writing or anything, as far as that's concerned.
What do you think, Bruce?
Mm-hmm. say.
First honest statement I've heard today.
Well, I'd have to study more in order to make a answer that I'd want anybody to be influenced by.
I've been relying on all these lawyers for legal facts, and I said, ask questions and don't have any answers, and so I'm really confused. But my direction is this, if there's any direction that I can take, and that is, I think that the trial process is complicated enough now for the district attorney. I don't want to complicate it any more for it. And I don't want additional things for him to prove, unless it's really important, and there's a very important background to it, a very important reason for it. I don't really want to complicate the matters in a trial court at all on criminal matters. In fact, I'd go the other way.
Could I ask a question? What was your thinking with respect to the New York approach to Colorado?
Let me try to be honest. I'm afraid I haven't considered it very strongly, and I must go and do so now. I work primarily with the California business, and I'll have to dig harder with it.
There's another question that I have in my mind that I'd like to have answered, and that is, are these states that have adopted similar statutes, what's been the situation, not with Supreme Court cases, but what's been the situation in the first court?
I don't know, and I'll try and get some specific.
That's a real important question, I think, of course. A very important question. Has it jammed the court, or has it speeded up a little bit?
I'll find out to the best of my ability.
There's so many things that you're talking about, court backlog problems and things like that. Illinois is much better off now than 7 years ago, but it isn't because of the statute.
Because they got 20 judges.
Finally got enough judges and finally got some administrative jurisdiction over the judges, and they're moving them around and making them try cases.
Right. I know there are many other factors, too. But with respect to statute, what has it done?
I'll see.
With respect to convictions?
With respect to convictions, with respect to arrests.
With respect to the practical, mechanical application of the law.
I'm most interested in the answer this person gets. They call up on the telephone, and they call a policeman, and the policeman says, well, we can do something about that, or we can't do something about that, because the law says this, or the law says that. And if there's a crime here, is it something that the people that are administering justice can proceed with on a reasonable, logical basis? This is my big concern. If they can't proceed in a reasonable manner, and there are too many phrases and clauses in here that create a logjam of the law, and
Let me make one observation and one suggestion. If anybody, you'll probably disagree with the observation. I don't care whether you do, but that is an open comment. The suggestion is, and if you disagree with it, let me know. I think personally, as far as I'm concerned, I would prefer to see each crime defined, burglary, larceny, rape, etc., etc., carry in its definition, carry in the statute what we mean, whether intentional, reckless, knowingly, and then in our general provisions section, as simply as possible, somewhat on the order of the present Oregon Code, we have a definitional section that says, as used in this penal code, the following terms, following definitions apply. Intentionally, means, etc., etc., recklessly means, etc., etc., and knowingly means, so that the policeman that you're talking about, and boy, it's a practical problem, knows exactly what the law is, district attorneys and judges, and it's as simple as can be, and we're not tied up with a lot of semantical or esoteric definitions or exceptions or conditions or qualifications. Now that's my own personal thought, and frankly, it doesn't deviate too far from the general section that we presently have in Chapter ORS 161. But this, you may have different views on that, but the suggestion I'm going to make is that the mood or the tone of this subcommittee with respect to this area certainly should adequately be reflected in the minutes. Suggest that Mildred get those minutes prepared as quickly as she can, and get them to Professor Arthur and Don, and because Don has worked intimately with the four of us for the past 12 months and knows our reactions, that he and Professor Arthur worked closely on this draft. And I think time is important. I think that we have been able to succeed and do as much as we've done as a subcommittee because we've met frequently. That is, certainly at intervals of not more than 3 weeks. And it's had a certain continuity that I think is a great benefit. So if you can do that and come up with a redraft that's going to require, I think, some real effort, I think our next session will be productive. I think today has been a productive session.
What you're saying is that Don's lumps have already subsided.
Well,
what he's saying is he'll turn the job over to our staff analyst.
I want it to be but what I'm saying is I don't think that it's fair to throw the whole burden right back on Professor Arthur.
Well, I agree. I certainly like to say this. I think the Professor Arthur's draft here is a vast improvement over what our existing law is, or lack of law that we have in our program right now. I think it's just a question of approach to this. I think it's the prosecutor in me coming to the surface here a little bit that bothers me. It's just the approach, but certainly as far as what you attempted to accomplish here, I think it's the same as, basically the same as what the Model Penal Code is trying to do with these other codes. I didn't mean to raise a bunch of stumbling blocks here to the progress of this subcommittee on this. I think we made good progress.
Can I ask
you
a question?
I think if we mean what we say. That's what we mean. We ought to say what we mean. But, I said that wasn't open for discussion. I think we should move along unless there's any more discussion.
Could I say this? I think I agree with Mr. Eller thoroughly about not creating a greater burden on the state in actually what it has to prove or get recommendations and this kind of thing. I think that too many of us think as lawyers in this sense of the forms in the filing cabinet, though, that there's some magic in willfully, maliciously, feloniously, and this kind of thing. But there's too much rigmarole that we need to simplify so that it can be done more easily, perhaps. But that everybody knows what they're talking about, and when we talk with the jury, that we're really talking with people across the table, and I think that the Model Penal Code tends to do this. And I'll dig real hard to try and get rid of some of the stumbling blocks and see if I can work with Don and Gene and get a little further ahead.
I certainly agree with the bones of this idea. I really do.
Well, yeah, the idea of getting away from these words such as want, maliciously, and things like that.
It's the right approach.
One small question on this recklessly has reference to conduct. What about the conduct is an affirmative action? What about those crimes which may be committed by failure to act?
Now this is another thing where we're going to have to move a little faster on my part, because the code, of course, takes into account and provides for definitions of omission. And where omission substitutes for act, and I'll have to get going on that as fast as I can. And an omission could be reckless, I'm sure.
Yeah, I just wondering if we needed that within this definition of reckless.
I think we don't need it in this definition, but we do need the definition pretty darn quick, so we know how it hooks in. Now, it's 2:30. I promised Bruce we'd be out of here by 2:30. We have arson, which we got kind of hard to talk to the meeting. Don, what do you think? Do you think that it'll take very long to resolve this?
No, I don't.
All right, well, then where should we direct our attention to? Preliminary draft number 4.
It's in your other book.
That's the slide down there. Well, it's in the other book. Oh, it's preliminary draft 4.
Yeah. In the thick book. It's 3 months from now. The first thick book.
Yeah, under preliminary draft number 4. Right, page 3. Unlawful use of firearms, section 2. Now, you'll recall our early drafts of arson didn't have this section in it. And we later decided that because this section was tied into the forestry code and the civil suit actions that were brought under that for treble damages, and the Hasten law that construed the statutes in which they looked to this criminal section to define and establish the standard of care that would be imposed upon landowners and others who use fire, railroads, or accidentally start a fire on land of another, and that type of thing, that we would continue to incorporate this section in our arson draft, although we changed the name of it to unlawful use of fire. The language is practically identical to what's presently in ORS. It's
1640.
Yeah, 1640. Yeah. Yeah, well, excuse me, 16407, that's right. And at the commission meeting, the last commission meeting, this was a section that was sent back to the subcommittee. There was a great deal of dissatisfaction expressed against keeping this in our penal code.
Which subcommittee?
Section 2.
The whole section.
The whole section.
I see.
And so we, one simple, and probably it's a cop-out, and we'll do it this way. But we've approached it from the standpoint, first of all, of eliminating it entirely, and we decided we didn't want to do that. The commission obviously doesn't want to continue to include it in our arson draft. So the third alternative would be to not do anything with it, except to recommend that the legislature, as part of the report of this commission, that this statute be transferred from the penal code over to the forestry code and included along with the statutes dealing with fires. And in that way, the statutory language would continue to exist, and we would do no violence to the case law with respect to the tort actions brought in.
Yeah, and it would no longer be a criminal offense at all.
Right.
But would be a basis for the
civil
liability of double and triple damage.
Am I correct that Section 2 was the only part of the arson draft that was re-referred to us, that everything else was approved?
Yes.
This is our forest fire and stubble fire.
Yes.
And if we take this out, then it's no longer a crime to set up.
Well, I'm not sure. There is a penalty section in 477.
This would fall into it's they provide this.
No, I'll
be a penalty, but they're not in the penal code. They're in the forest code. And this actually is tied in a little bit with what Courtney mentioned at the very beginning of our meeting. There are areas of the law that eventually the legislature is going to have to deal with, whether this commission does or not. And we've all recognized these areas as we've gone along. Decided that it's beyond the scope of the work of this commission to get into some of these other areas.
Yeah, it's a forestry code, isn't it?
Yes.
But it's a policy question of whether this should be criminal conduct. I mean,
it's a miserable statute, frankly. You'll read the language, for example, under subsection 2, language, he intentionally or negligently allows fire to escape. You've got intentional conduct prescribed in the very same breath that you prescribe negligent conduct, and provide the very same range of penalties.
Well, we talked about that. I remember when we went over the first time, we were going to give the VA a break. All he had to prove was negligence when he thought it was intentional.
But at the commission meeting, George Plant, and I didn't justify him, they really teed off on the statute, and he felt that it was a terrible penal statute to have, and secondly, by retaining it in the penal code, the commission, in effect, was subscribing to special interest type of legislation. And
well, it's special interest because of the great importance of the state's economy and the forests.
What is the reason? You
know, you're on your airplane.
No, that's a different. Airplane's a different part of this. They took that. They bought that.
Just in line with what we've been discussing today, we're talking about making something a crime conduct that's intentional, intentionally done, knowingly done, or recklessly done, or criminally negligently done, a crime. Now, I think we cover proscribe that kind of conduct with first degree and second degree arson and reckless burning. And this unlawful use of fire is a hybrid sort of thing with someplace beyond that. I think it's probably passing the buck, but the more I thought about this, I think I made the suggestion at the full commission meeting, and they thought that we should send it back and let the subcommittee decide. Maybe the best thing to do would be just to take it and put it in forestry code, 477, the whole thing in total.
And let some other organization determine whether or not there ought to be a criminal penalty on it?
Well,
make our recommendation.
If it's reckless, well, we could redraft it to put it in there, and it would carry the penalty that's provided in 477-990 would attach.
Redraft it and put it in where?
In 477.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's a misdemeanor now. Maximum is 90 days in jail and $500 fine.
But if we're talking about intentional, knowing, or reckless conduct without this section, that type of burning is already covered, isn't it?
See, another thing about this statute, there's no element of damage set out in the statute.
In this statute?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's no, you're not required to show that anybody was damaged or any property was damaged.
No amount, dollar damage is bad as thousand dollars.
Just actually allowing the fire to escape. And I suppose you could argue, well, that impliedly carries with it damage, an element of damage. If the fire burns someplace, it's going to damage something. It's a badly worded criminal statute.
I think it belongs in 477, and I'm not so sure that there's any purpose in having a criminal punishment for it.
I'll check Mr. Spartan's reason.
Okay, could I interpret the motion to mean that what we're going to be doing in essence is taking ORS 164070 and putting it in Chapter 477. And you kind of modified 164070 ever so slightly by the way it appears in subsection 2.
I changed one word. I changed possible. Now, it was every possible effort to extinguish the fire. I changed it to every reasonable effort simply because there were Oregon cases that had construed the language every possible effort to mean every reasonable effort.
Well,
so I, well, as long as the court said this is what it means, let's say that. And that's the only change I made.
Well, and you may have changed in sub 2, willfully.
I changed the title.
Intentionally to look at. Willfully to intentionally.
Yes.
Should we just move section 2, or should we move the existing statute? And then fight from it. And approach it later.
Strike this from our draft and move the present statute to the forestry code.
Is that acceptable to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've heard the motion as amended. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Mm-hmm.
Aye. So no motion carried, then we'll do that, and this motion will envision the renumbering of the sections which appear in the arson draft to accommodate the deletion of section 2. Correct? Okay, is there any further business? Okay, if not, Professor Arson, thank you very much. I wasn't being facetious when I said that we wouldn't agree with you all the time, but we're immensely indebted to you, and I really think we're on the right track.
Now, how people who are making living on 3,000.
All right.
How many minutes for an ex-migrant farm worker?
Well, boy, it'll have to be quick. We have to be in session at 2 o'clock, and I set the rules down early.
I'm an ex-farm worker, and I'm finally seated at the...
You give us your name.
Hill. My name is Ruben Contreras.
I'll say this, if any of you have written statements you'd like to leave with the committee, we'll have them put in form by the secretary and then we'll go over them. I'm going to declare the meeting adjourned.